These juvenile criminals hit a low level. Born with only the instinct for survival, the highest morality they achieved was a shaky loyalty to a peer group, a street gang. But the do-gooders attempted to appeal to their better natures, to reach them, to spark their moral sense. Tosh! They had no better natures. Experience taught them what they were doing was the way to survive. The puppy never got his spanking. Therefore, what he did with pleasure and success must be moral. The basis of all morality is duty, a concept with the same relation to group that self-interest has to individual. Nobody preached duty to these kids in a way they could understand, that is, with a spanking. But the society they were in told them endlessly about their rights. The results should have been predictable, since a human being has no natural rights of any nature. Mr. Dubois had paused. Somebody took the bait. Sir, how about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? Ah, yes, the unalienable rights. Each year someone quotes that magnificent poetry. Life? What right to life has a man who is drowning in the Pacific? The ocean will not hearken to his cries. What right to life has a man who must die if he is to save his children? If he chooses to save his own life, does he do so as a matter of right? If two men are starving and cannibalism is the only alternative to death, which man's right is unalienable? And is it right, as to liberty, the heroes who signed the great document pledged themselves to buy liberty with their lives. Liberty is never unalienable. It must be redeemed regularly with the blood of patriots, or it always vanishes. Of all the so-called natural human rights that have ever been invented, liberty is least likely to be cheap and is never free of cost. The third right, the pursuit of happiness, it is indeed unalienable, but it is not a right. It is simply a universal condition which tyrants cannot take away nor patriots restore. Cast me into a dungeon, burn me at the stake, crown me king of kings. I can pursue happiness as long as my brain lives, but neither gods nor saints, wise men nor subtle drugs, can ensure that I will catch it. Mr. Dubois then turned to me. I told you that juvenile delinquent is a contradiction in terms. Delinquent means failing in duty. But duty is an adult virtue. Indeed, a juvenile becomes an adult when and only when he acquires a knowledge of duty and embraces it as dearer than the self-love he was born with. There never was, there cannot be, a juvenile delinquent. But for every juvenile criminal, there are always one or more adult delinquents, people of mature years who either do not know their duty or who, knowing it, fail. And that was the soft spot which destroyed what was in many ways an admirable culture. The junior hoodlums who roamed their streets were symptoms of a greater sickness. Their citizens, all of them counted as such, glorified their mythology of rights and lost track of their duties. No nation so constituted can endure. I wondered how Colonel Dubois would have classed Dillinger. Was he a juvenile criminal who merited pity even though you had to get rid of him? Or was he an adult delinquent who deserved nothing but contempt? I didn't know. I would never know. The one thing I was sure of was that he would never again kill any little girls. That suited me. I went to sleep.
This ends